Downs did. We keep to the woods twixt the river and the road, but we don't even see any caravans. They must be high-tailing it to Haven. On we run. Night falls, and we keep on running.
You all right? I asked Ben when we stopped by the river to refill the bottles.
Keep on going, he says, gasping. Keep on going.
Viola sends me a worried look.
I'm sorry we don't got food,
I say, but he just shakes his head and says,
keep going.
So we keep going. Midnight comes and we run through that, too. Who knows how many days? Who cares anymore? Till finally Ben says,
wait,
and stops, hands on his knees, breathing hard in a real unhealthy way. I look round us by the light of the moons. Viola's looking, too. She points.
There!
Up there, Ben, I say, pointing up the small hill Viola's seen.
We'll be able to get a view.
Ben don't say nothing, just gasps and nods his head and follows us. There's trees all the way up the side, but a well-tended path and a wide clearing at the top. When we get there, we see why.
A cemetery,
I say.
A what?
Viola says, looking round at all the square stones marking out their graves. Must be 100, maybe 2, in orderly rows and well-kept grass. Settler life is hard, and it's short, and lots of New World people have lost the battle. It's a place for burying dead folk, I say. Her eyes widen.
A place for doing what?
Don't people die in space? I ask.
Yeah, she says. But we burn them. We don't put them in holes.
She crosses her arms around herself, mouth and forehead frowning, peering around at the graves.
How can this be sanitary?
Ben still hasn't said anything, just flopped down by a gravestone and leaned against it, catching his breath. I take a swig from a water bottle and then hand it to Ben. I look out around us. You can see down the road for a piece, and there's a view of the river, too, rushing by us on the left now. It's a clear sky, the stars out, the moon starting to crescent in the sky above us.
Ben,
I say, looking up into the night.
Yeah,
he says, drinking down his water.
You all right?
Yeah.
His breath's getting back to normal.
I'm built for farm labor, not sprinting.
I look at the moons one more time, the smaller one chasing the larger one. Two brightnesses up there, still light enough to cast shadows, ignorant of the troubles of men. I look into myself. I look deep into my noise, and I realize I'm ready. This is the last chance, and I'm ready.
I think it's time, I say.
I look back at him.
I think now's the time, if it's ever gonna be.
He licks his lips and swallows his water. He puts the cap back on the bottle.
I know,
he says.
Time for what? Viola asks.
Where should I start?
Ben asks. I shrug.
Anywhere,
I say.
As long as it's true.
I can hear Ben's noise gathering up the whole story, taking one stream out of the river. Finally, the one that tells what really happened. The one hidden for so long and so deep, I didn't even know it was there for my whole upgrowing life. Viola's silence has gone more silent than usual, as still as the night, waiting to hear what he might say. Ben takes a deep breath.
The noise germ wasn't spackle warfare, he says. That's the first thing.
The germ was here when we landed, a naturally occurring phenomenon in the air. Always had been. Always will be. We got out of our ships, and within a day, everyone could hear everyone's thoughts. Imagine our surprise. He pauses, remembering.
Except it wasn't everyone,
Viola says.
It was just the men,
I say. Ben nods. No one knows why. Still don't. Our scientists were mainly agriculturalists, and the doctors couldn't find a reason, and so for a while, there was chaos.
Just chaos, like you wouldn't believe.
Chaos and confusion and noise. He scratches underneath his chin. A lot of men scattered themselves into far communities, getting away from Haven as fast as roads could be cut. But soon, folk realized there was nothing to be done about it. So, for a while, we all tried to live with it the best we could, found different ways to deal with it, different communities taking their own paths. Same as we did when we realized all our livestock were talking too, and pets and local creatures. He looks up into the sky, and to the cemetery around us, and the river and road below. Everything on this planet talks to each other, he says. Everything. That's what New World is. Information. All the time. Never stopping. Whether you want it or not. The Spackle knew it. Evolved to live with it. But we weren't equipped for it. Not even close. And too much information can drive a man mad. Too much information becomes just noise. And it never, never stops. He pauses. And the noise is there, of course, like it always is. His, and mine, and Viola's silence only making it louder. As the years went by, he goes on, times were hard all over New World, and getting harder. Crops failing, and sickness, and no prosperity, and no Eden. Definitely no Eden. And a preaching started spreading in the land. A poisonous preaching. A preaching that started to blame.
They blamed the aliens,
Viola says.
The Spackle,
I say, and the shame returns. They blamed the Spackle, Ben confirms. And somehow preaching became a movement, and a movement became a war. He shakes his head. They didn't stand a chance. We had guns, they didn't. And that was the end of the Spackle.
Not all, I say.
No, he says. Not all. But they learned better than to come too near men again, I tell you that. A brief wind blows across the hilltop. When it stops, it's like we're the only three people left on New World. Us and the cemetery ghosts.
But the war is not the end of the story, Viola says quietly.
No, Ben says. The story ain't finished. Ain't even half finished. And I know it ain't. And I know where it's heading. And I changed my mind. I don't want it to finish. But I do, too. I look into Ben's eyes. Into his noise.
The war didn't stop with the Spackle, I say. Not in Prentice Town.
Ben licks his lips, and I can feel unsteadiness in his noise, and hunger and grief at what he's already imagining is our next parting.
War is a monster, he says almost to himself. War is the devil.
It starts and it consumes and it grows and grows and grows. He's looking at me now. And otherwise normal men become monsters too.
They couldn't stand the silence,
Viola says, her voice still.
They couldn't stand women knowing everything about them, and them knowing nothing about women.
Some men thought that, Ben says. Not all. Not me. Not Killian. There were good men in Prentice Town.
But enough thought it, I say.
Yes, he nods. There's another pause as the truth starts to show itself. Finally. And forever. Viola is shaking her head.
Are you saying? She says. Are you really saying?
And here it is. Here's the thing that's the center of it all. Here's the thing that's been growing in my head since I left the swamp, seen in flashes of men along the way, most clearly in Matthew Lyles, but also in the reactions of everyone who even hears the word Prentice Town. Here it is. The truth. And I don't want it. But I say it anyway.
After they killed the Spackle, I say, the men of Prentice Town killed the women of Prentice Town.
Viola gasps, even though she's got to have guessed it too.
Not all the men, Ben says,
but many, allowing themselves to be swayed by Mayor Prentice and the preachings of Aaron, who used to say that what was hidden must be evil.
They killed all the women and all the men who tried to protect them.
Mama,
I say. Ben just nods in confirmation. I feel a sickness in my stomach.
Mama dying.
Being killed by men I probably saw every day. I have to sit down on a gravestone. I have to think of something else. I just do. I have to put something else in my noise so I can stand it.
Who was Jessica?
I say, remembering Matthew Lyle's noise back in Far Branch. Remembering the violence in it. The noise that now makes sense even though it don't make no sense at all.
Some people could see what was coming, Ben says.
Jessica Elizabeth was our mayor, and she could see the way the wind was blowing.
Jessica Elizabeth, I think.
New Elizabeth.
She organized some of the girls and younger boys to flee across the swamp, Ben continues. But before she could go herself with the women and the men who hadn't lost their minds, the mayor's men attacked.
And that was that, I say, feeling numb all over. New Elizabeth becomes Prentice Town.
Your ma never thought it would happen, Ben says, smiling sadly to himself at some memory. So full of love, that woman. So full of hope in the goodness of others. He stops smiling. And then there came a moment when it was too late to flee, and you were way too young to be sent away, and so she gave you to us, told us to keep you safe, no matter what. I look up.
How was staying in Prentice Town keeping me safe?
Ben staring right at me, sadness everywhere around him, his noise so weighted with it, it's a wonder he can stay upright.
Why didn't you leave?
I ask.
He rubs his face. 'Cause we didn't think the attack would really happen either.
Or, I didn't. Anyway, and we had put the farm together, and I thought it would blow over before anything really bad happened. I thought it was just rumors and paranoia, including on the part of your ma, right up to the last. He frowns.
I was wrong.
I was stupid.
He looks away.
I was willfully blind. I remember his words comforting me about the spackle.
We've all made mistakes, Todd. All of us.
And then it was too late, Ben says. The deed was done, and word of what Prentice Town had done spread like wildfire, starting with the few who'd managed to escape. All men from Prentice Town were declared criminals. We couldn't leave. Viola's arms are still crossed.
Why didn't someone come and get you? Why didn't the rest of New World come after you?
And do what? Ben says, sounding tired. Fight another war, but this time with heavily armed men? Lock us up in a giant prison? They laid down the law that if any man from Prentice Town crossed the swamp, he'd be executed. And then they left us to it.
But they could have...
Viola says, holding her palms to the air.
Something, I don't know.
If it ain't happening on your doorstep, Ben says, it's easier to think, why go out and find trouble? We had the whole of the swamp twixt us and New World. The mayor sent word that Prentice Town would be a town in exile, doomed, of course, to a slow death. We'd agree never to leave, and if we ever did, he'd hunt us down and kill us hisself.
Didn't people try?
Viola says.
Didn't they try to get away?
They tried, Ben says, full of meaning. It wasn't uncommon for people to disappear.
But if you and Killian were innocent,
I start. We weren't innocent, Ben says strongly, and suddenly his noise tastes bitter. He sighs.
We weren't.
What do you mean? I ask, raising my head. The sickness in my stomach ain't leaving. What do you mean you weren't innocent?
You let it happen,
Viola says.
You didn't die with the other men who were protecting the women.
We didn't fight, he says. And we didn't die. He shakes his head.
Not innocent at all.
Why didn't you fight? I ask. Killian wanted to, Ben says quickly. I want you to know that. He wanted to do whatever he could to stop them.
He would have given his life. He looks away once more. But I wouldn't let him.
Why not?
I get it, Viola whispers. I look at her, 'cause I sure don't.
Get what?
Viola keeps looking at Ben.
They either die fighting for what's right and leave you an unprotected baby, she says, or they become complicit with what's wrong and keep you alive.
I don't know what complicit means, but I can guess. They did it for me. All that horror. They did it for me. Ben and Killian. Killian and Ben. They did it so I could live. I don't know how I feel about any of this. Doing what's right should be easy. It shouldn't be just another big mess like everything else.
So we waited, Ben says, in a town-sized prison, full of the ugliest noise you ever heard before men started denying their own pasts, before the mayor came up with his grand plans. And so we waited for the day you were old enough to get away on your own, innocent as we could keep you. He rubs his hand over his head. But the mayor was waiting too.
For me? I ask, though I know it's true. For the last boy to become a man, Ben says. When boys become men, they were told the truth, or a version of it anyway, and then they were made complicit themselves. I remember his noise from back on the farm, about my birthday, about how a boy becomes a man, about what complicity really means and how it can be passed on, how it was waiting to be passed on to me, and about the men who... I put it out of my head.
That don't make no sense, I say.
You were the last, Ben says. If he could make every single boy in Prentisstown a man by his own meaning, then he's God, ain't he? He's created all of us and is in complete control.
If one of us falls, I say,
we all fall, Ben finishes. That's why he wants you. You're a symbol. You're the last innocent boy of Prentisstown. If he can make you fall, then his army is complete and of his own perfect making. And if not, I say, though I'm wondering if I've already fallen.
If not, Ben says, he'll kill you.
So Mayor Prentice is as crazy as Aaron, then, Viola says.
Not quite, Ben says. Aaron is crazy, but the mayor knows enough to use craziness to achieve his ends.
Which are what?
Viola says.
This world, Ben says calmly. He wants all of it.
I open my mouth to ask more stuff I don't want to know, but then, as if there was never going to be anything else that could ever happen, we hear it. Thump, but a thump, but a thump. Coming down the road, relentless, like a joke that ain't ever going to be funny.
You've got to be kidding, Viola says.
Ben's already back on his feet, listening. It sounds like just one horse. We all look down the road, shining a little in the moonlight.
Binocs,
Viola says, now right by my side. I fish him out without another word, click on the night setting, and look, searching out the sound as it rings through the night air. Ba-da-thump, ba-da-thump. I search down the road farther and farther back till... there it is. There he is. Who else? Mr. Prentice Jr., alive and well and untied and back on his horse.
Damn,
I hear from Viola, reading my noise as I hand her the binocs.
Davy Prentice?
Ben says, also reading my noise.
The one and only.
I put the water bottles back in Viola's bag.
We gotta go.
Viola hands the binocs to Ben, and he looks for himself. He takes them away from his eyes and gives the binocs a quick once-over.
Nifty,
he says.
We need to go, Viola says. As always.
Ben turns to us, binocs still in his hand. He's looking from one of us to the other, and I see what's forming in his noise.
Ben,
I start. No, he says. This is where I leave you.
Ben!
I can handle Davy Prentice.
He has a gun,
I say.
You don't.
Ben comes up to me.
Todd,
he says.
No, Ben,
I say, my voice getting louder.
I ain't listening.
He
He looks me in the eye, and I notice he don't seem to be having to bend down anymore to do it.
"Todd," he says again, "I atone for the wrong I've done by keeping you safe."
"You can't leave me, Ben,"
I say, my voice getting wet.
"Shut up."
"Not again."
He's shaking his head. "I can't come to Haven with you. You know I can't. I'm the enemy.
We can explain what happened."
But he's still shaking his head.
"The horse is getting closer," Viola says. Thump, bada thump, bada thump.
"The only thing that makes me a man," Ben says, his voice steady as a rock, "is seeing you safely into becoming a man yourself."
"I ain't a man yet, Ben,"
I say, my throat catching.
"Shut up. I don't even know how many days I got left."
And then he smiles, and it's the smile that tells me it's over.
16, he says.
16 days till your birthday. He takes my chin and lifts it. "But you've been a man for a good while now. Don't let no one tell you otherwise."
"Ben!"
"Go," he says. And he comes up to me and hands Viola the binocs behind my back and takes me in his arms.
"No father could be prouder,"
I hear him say by my ear.
"No,"
I say, my words slurring.
"It ain't fair."
"It ain't," he pulls himself away. "But there's hope at the end of the road. You remember that."
"Don't go,"
I say. "I have to. Danger's coming."
"Closer and closer,"
Viola says, binocs to her eyes.
"Ba-da-thump, ba-da-thump."
"I'll stop him. I'll buy you time." Ben looks at Viola. "You take care of Todd," he says. "I have your word?"
"You have my word,"
Viola says.
"Ben, please,"
I whisper.
"Please."
He grips my shoulders for a last time.
"Remember,"
he says,
"hope."
And he don't say nothing more, and he turns and runs down the hill from the cemetery to the road. When he gets to the bottom, he looks back and sees us still watching him.
"What are you waiting for?"
he shouts.
"Run!"
37. What's the point? I won't say what I feel when we run down the other side of the hill and away from Ben, forever this time, 'cause how is there any life after this? Life equals running, and when we stop running, maybe that's how we'll know life is finally finished.
"Come on, Todd,"
Viola calls, looking back over her shoulder.
"Please hurry."
I don't say nothing. I run. We get down the hill and back by the river. Again. With the road on our other side. Again. Always the same. The river's louder than it was, rushing by with some force, but who cares? What does it matter? Life ain't fair.
It ain't. Not never.
It's pointless and stupid, and there's only suffering and pain and people who want to hurt you. You can't love nothing or no one, 'cause it'll all be taken away or ruined, and you'll be left alone and constantly having to fight, constantly having to run just to stay alive. There's nothing good in this life. Not nothing good nowhere. What's the effing point?
The point is,
Viola says, stopping halfway through a dense patch of scrub to hit me really hard on the shoulder.
He cared enough about you to maybe sacrifice himself, and if you just give up,
she shouts that part,
then you're saying that the sacrifice is worth nothing.
Ow, I say, rubbing my shoulder. But why should he have to sacrifice himself? Why should I have to lose him again? She steps up close to me.
Do you think you're the only person who's lost someone?
She says in a dangerous whisper.
Do you forget that my parents are dead too?
I did. I did forget. I don't say nothing.
All I've got now is you,
she says, her voice still angry.
And all you've got now is me. And I'm mad Ben left too, and I'm mad my parents died, and I'm mad we ever thought of coming to this planet in the first place, but that's how it is, and it sucks that it's just us, but we can't do anything about it.
I still don't say nothing. But there she is, and I look at her. Really look at her, for probably the first time since I saw her cowering next to a log back in the swamp when I thought she was a spackle. A lifetime ago. She's still kind of cleaned up from the days in Carbonell Downs. Only yesterday, only just yesterday. But there's dirt on her cheeks, and she's skinnier than she used to be, and there are dark patches under her eyes, and her hair is messy and tangled, and her hands are covered in sooty blackness, and her shirt has a green stain of grass across the front from when she once fell, and there's a cut on her lip from when a branch smacked her when we were running with Ben, and no bandages left to stitch it up, and she's looking at me. And she's telling me she's all I've got, and that I'm all she's got. And I feel a little bit how that feels. The colors in my noise go different. Her voice softens, but only a little. "Ben's gone, and Manchie's gone, and my mother and father are gone," she says. "And I hate all of that. I hate it. But we're almost at the end of the road. We're almost there. And if you don't give up, I don't give up."
"Do you believe there's hope at the end?" I ask.
"No," she says simply, looking away. "No, I don't, but I'm still going." She eyes me. "You coming with?"
I don't have to answer. We go on running. But
"We should just take the road," I say, holding back yet another branch. "But the army," she says, "and the horses."
"They know where we're going. We know where they're going. We all seem to have taken the same route to get to Haven."
"And we'll hear them coming," she agrees. "And the road's fastest."
"The road's fastest."
And she says, "Then let's just take the effing road and get ourselves to Haven." I smile a little.
"You said effing," I say. "You actually said the word effin'." So we take the effin' road as fast as our tiredness will let us. It's still the same dusty, twisty, sometimes muddy river road that it was all those miles and miles ago, and the same leafy, tree-filled new world all around us. If you were just landing here and didn't know nothing about nothing, you really might think it was Eden after all. A wide valley is opening up around us. Flat at the bottom where the river is, but distant hills beginning to climb up on either side. The hills are lit only by moonlight. No sign of distant settlements or, anyway, of ones with lights still burning. No sign of Haven ahead neither. But we're at the flattest point of the valley and can't see much past the twists in the road either before us or back. Forest still covers both sides of the river, and you'd be tempted to think that all of New World had closed up and everyone left, leaving just this road behind them. We go on. And on. Not till the first stripes of dawn start appearing down the valley in front of us do we stop to take on more water. We drink. There's only my noise and the river rushing by. No hoofbeats. No other noise.
"You know this means he succeeded,"
Viola says, not meeting my eye.
"Whatever he did, he stopped the man on the horse."
I just, and nod.
"And we never heard gunshots."
I, and nod again.
"I'm sorry for shouting at you before," she says. "I just wanted you to keep going. I didn't want you to stop."
I know. We're leaning against a pair of trees by the riverbank. The road is to our backs, and across the river is just trees, and the far side of the valley rises up, and then only the sky above, getting lighter and more blue and bigger and emptier till even the stars start leaving it.
"When we left on the scout ship,"
Viola says, looking up across the river with me,
"I was really upset leaving my friends behind. Just a few kids from the other caretaker families, but still. I thought I'd be the only one my age on this planet for 7 whole months.
I drink some water. I didn't have friends back in Prentistown. She turns to me.
"What do you mean, no friends? You had to have friends."
"I had a few for a while. Boys a couple of months older than me. But when boys become men, they stop talking to boys." I shrug. "I was the last boy. In the end, there was just me and Manchie." She gazes up into the fading stars.
"It's a stupid rule."
"It is." We don't say nothing more. Just me and Viola by the riverside, resting ourselves as another dawn comes. Just me and her.
We stir after a minute, get ourselves ready to go again.
We could reach Haven by tomorrow, I say, if we keep on going.
Tomorrow,
Viola nods.
I hope there's food.
It's her turn to carry the bag, so I hand it to her, and the sun is peeking up over the end of the valley where it looks like the river's running right into it. And as the light hits the hills across the river from us, something catches my eye. Viola turns immediately at the spark in my noise.
What?
I shield my eyes from the new sun. There's a little trail of dust rising from the top of the far hills. And it's moving.
What is that? I say.
Viola fishes out the binocs and looks through them.
I can't see clearly, she says. Trees in the way.
Someone traveling?
Maybe that's the other road. The fork we didn't take.
We watch for a minute or two as the dust trail keeps rising, heading toward Haven at the slow speed of a distant cloud. It's weird seeing it without any sound.
I wish I knew where the army was, I say. How far they were behind us.
Maybe Carbonell Downs put up too good a fight.
Viola points the binocs upriver to see the way we came, but it's too flat, too twisty. All there is to be seen is trees. Trees and sky and quiet and a silent trail of dust making its way along the far hilltops.
We should go, I say. I'm starting to feel a little spooked. Let's go then,
Viola says quiet-like. Back on the road. Back to the life of running. We have no food with us, so breakfast is a yellow fruit that Viola spies on some trees we pass that she swears she ate in Carbonell Downs. They become lunch, too, but it's better than nothing. I think again of the knife at my back.
Could I hunt if there was time?
But there ain't no time. We run past midday and into afternoon. The world is still abandoned and spooky. Just me and Viola running along the valley bottom. No settlements to be seen, no caravans or carts, no other sound loud enough to be heard over the rushing of the river, getting bigger by the hour, to the point where it's hard to even hear my noise, where even if we want to talk, we have to raise our voices. But we're too hungry to talk, and too tired to talk, and running too much to talk. And so on we go, and I find myself watching Viola. The trail of dust on the far hilltop follows us as we run, pulling ahead slowly as the day gets older and finally disappearing in the distance, and I watch her checking it as we hurry on. I watch her run next to me, flinching at the aches in her legs. I watch her rub them when we rest, and watch her when she drinks from the water bottles. Now that I've seen her, I can't stop seeing her. She catches me.
What?
Nothing, I say. And I look away, 'cause I don't know either. The river and the road have straightened out as the valley gets steeper and closer on both sides. We can see a little bit back the way we came. No army yet. No horsemen neither. The quiet is almost scarier than if there was noise everywhere. Dusk comes. The sun setting in the valley behind us, setting over wherever the army might be and whatever's left of New World back there, whatever's happened to the men who fought against the army. And the men who joined. Whatever's happened to the women. Viola runs in front of me. I watch her run. Just after nightfall, we finally come to another settlement. Another one with docks on the river. Another one abandoned. There are only 5 houses in total along a little strip of the road. One with what looks like a small general store tacked onto the front.
Hold on,
Viola says, stopping.
Dinner?
I say, catching my breath. She nods. It takes about 6 kicks to open the door of the general store, and though there clearly ain't no one here at all, I still look round expecting to be punished. Inside it's mostly cans, but we find a dry loaf of bread, some bruised fruit, and a few strips of dried meat.
These aren't more than a day or two old, Viola says, twixt mouthfuls. They must have fled to Haven yesterday, or the day before.
Rumors of an army are a powerful thing, I say, not chewing my dried meat well enough before I swallow, and coughing up a little bit of it. We fill our bellies as best we can, and I shove the rest of the food into Viola's bag, now hanging round my shoulders. I see the book when I do, still there, still wrapped in its plastic bag,
still with a knife-shaped slash all the way through it. I reach in through the plastic bag, rubbing my fingers across the cover. It's soft to the touch, and the binding still gives off a faint whiff of leather. The book. My ma's book. It's come all the way with us. Survived its own injury, just like us. I look up at Viola. She catches me again.
What?
She says. Nothing. I put the book back in the bag with the food. Let's go. Back on the road, back down the river, back toward Haven.
This should be our last night, you know, Viola says. If Dr. Snow was right, we'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah, I say, and the world will change.
Again.
Again, I agree. We go on a few more paces.
You starting to feel hope?
Viola asks, her voice curious. No, I say, fuddling my noise. You? Her eyebrows are up, but she shakes her head.
No, no.
But we're going anyway.
Oh, yeah,
Viola says. Hell or high water? It'll probably be both, I say. The sun sets. The moons rise again, smaller crescents than the night before. The sky is still clear, the stars still up. The world's still quiet, just the rush of the river getting steadily louder. Midnight comes. 15 days. 15 days till...
Till what?
We carry on through the night, the sky falling slowly past us, our words stopping a little as dinner wears off and tiredness takes hold again. Just before dawn, we find two overturned carts in the road, grains of wheat spilled everywhere and a few empty baskets rolled on their sides across the road.
They didn't even take the time to save everything,
Viola says.
They left half of it on the ground.
Good a place as any for breakfast. I flip over one of the baskets, drag it over to where the road overlooks the river, and sit down on it. Viola picks up another basket, brings it over right next to me, and sits down. There are glimmers of light in the sky as the sun gets set to rise, the road pointing right toward it, the river too, rushing toward the dawn. I open the bag and take out the general store food, handing some to Viola and eating what I've got. We drink from the water bottles. The bag is open on my lap. There are our remaining clothes, and there are the binocs. And there's the book again. I feel her silence next to me, feel the pull of it on me, and the hollows in my chest and stomach and head, and I remember the ache I used to feel when she got too close, how it felt like grief, how it felt like a loss, like I was falling into nothing, how it clenched me up and made me want to weep, made me actually weep. But now not so much. I look over to her. She's got to know what's in my noise. I'm the only one around, and she's got better and better at reading it despite how loud the river's getting. But she sits there, quietly eating, waiting for me to say, waiting for me to ask, 'cause this is what I'm thinking. When the sun comes up, it'll be the day we get to Haven, the day we get to a place filled with more people than I've ever seen together in my life, a place filled with so much noise you can't never be alone. Unless they found a cure, in which case, I'll be the only noisy one, which would actually be worse. We get to Haven. We'll be part of a city. It won't just be Todd and Viola sitting by a river as the sun comes up, eating our breakfast, the only two people on the face of the planet. It'll be everyone, all together. This might be our last chance. I look away from her to speak.
You know that thing with voices that you do?
Yeah, she says quiet. I take out the book.
Do you think you could do a Prentice Town voice?
38.
I heard a maiden call.
My dearest Todd,
Viola reads, copying Ben's accent as best she can, which is pretty ruddy good.
My dearest son.
My ma's voice.
My ma speaking. I cross my arms and look down into the wheat spilled across the ground.
I begin this journal on the day of your birth, the day I first held you in my arms rather than in my belly.
You kick just as much outside as in, and you're the most beautiful thing that's ever happened in the whole entire universe. You're easily the most beautiful thing on New World, and there's no contest in New Elizabeth, that's for sure. I feel my face getting red, but the sun's still not high enough for anyone to see. I wish your pa were here to see you, Todd, but New World and the Lord above saw fit to take him with the sickness 5 months ago, and we'll both just have to wait to see him in the next world.
You look like him.
Well, babies don't look much like anything but babies, but I'm telling you, you look like him. You're gonna be tall, Todd, 'cause your pa was tall. You're gonna be strong, 'cause your pa was strong. And you're gonna be handsome. Oh, are you ever gonna be handsome? The ladies of New World won't know what hit 'em.
Viola turns a page, and I don't look at her. I sense she's not looking at me, neither, and I wouldn't want to see a smile on her face right about now. 'Cause that weird thing's happening, too. Her words are not her words, and they're coming out of her mouth sounding like a lie, but making a new truth, creating a different world where my ma's talking directly to me, Viola speaking with a voice not her own, and the world, for a little while at least, the world is all for me. The world's being made just for me.
Let me tell you about the place you've been born into, son. It's called New World, and it's a whole planet made entirely of hope.
Viola stops, just for a second, then carries on.
We landed here almost exactly 10 years ago, looking for a new way of life. One clean and simple and honest and good. One different from Old World in all respects. Where people could live in safety and peace with God as our guide and with love for our fellow man. There have been struggles. I won't begin this story to you with a lie, Todd. It ain't been easy here. Oh, listen to me, writing down ain't when addressing my son. That's settler life for you. I suppose not much time for niceties, and it's easy to sink to the level of people who revel in squandering their manners. But there's not much harm in ain't, surely. Okay, that's decided then. My first bad choice as a mother. Say ain't all you like, Todd. I promise not to correct you.
Viola purses her lips, but I don't say nothing, so she continues.
So there's been hardship and sickness on New World and in New Elizabeth. There's something called the noise here on this planet that men have been struggling with since we landed, but the strange thing is you'll be one of the boys in the settlement who won't know any different, and so it'll be hard to explain to you what life was like before and why it's so difficult now, but we're managing the best we can. A man called David Prentice, who's got a son just a bit older than you, Todd, and who's one of our better organizers. I believe he was a caretaker on the ship over, if memory serves me correct.
Viola pauses at this, too, but this time it's me who waits for her to say something. She don't.
He convinced Jessica Elizabeth, our mayor, to found this little settlement on the far side of an enormous swamp so that the noise of the rest of New World can't never reach us unless we allow it to. It's still noisy as anything here in New Elizabeth, but at least it's people we know. At least it's people we trust, for the most part. My role here is that I farm several fields of wheat up north of the settlement. Since your pa passed, our close friends Ben and Killian have been helping me out since theirs is the next farm over. I can't wait for you to meet them. Well, wait. You already have. They've already held you and said hello, so look at that. One day in the world and you've already made two friends. It's a good way to start, son. In fact, I'm sure you'll do fine, 'cause you came out 2 weeks early. Clearly you decided you'd had enough and wanted to see what this world had to offer you. I can't blame you. The sky is so big and blue, and the trees so green, and this is a world where the animals talk to you, really talk, and you can even talk back, and there's so much wonder to be had, so much just waiting for you, Todd, that I almost can't stand that it's not happening for you right now, that you're gonna have to wait to see all that's possible, all the things you might do.
Viola takes a breath and says,
There's a break in the page here, and a little space, and then it says later, like she got interrupted.
She looks up at me.
You okay?
Yeah, yeah. I nod real fast, my arms still crossed.
Go on.
It's getting lighter, the sun truly coming up. I turn away from her a little. She reads.
Later. Sorry, son. Had to stop for a minute for a visit from our holy man, Aaron.
Another pause. Another lick of the lips.
We've been lucky to have him, though I must admit of late he's not been saying things I exactly agree with about the natives of New World, which are called the Spackle, by the way, and which were a big surprise, since they were so shy at first neither the original planners back on Old World or our first scout ships even knew they were here. They're very sweet creatures, different and maybe primitive, and no spoken or written language that we can really find, but I don't agree with some of the thinking of the people here that the Spackle are animals rather than intelligent beings, and Aaron's been preaching lately about how God has made a dividing line twixt us and them, and... Well, that's not really something to discuss on your first day, is it? Aaron believes what he believes devoutly, has been a pillar of faith for all of us these long years, and should anyone find this journal and read it, let me say here for the record that it was a privilege to have him come by and bless you on your first day of life. Okay? But I will say also on your first day that the attractiveness of power is something you should learn about before you get too much older. It's the thing that separates men from boys, though not in the way most men think. And that's all I'll say, prying eyes and all that. Oh, son, there's so much wonder in the world. Don't let no one tell you otherwise. Yes, life has been hard here on New World, and I'll even admit to you here, 'cause if I'm going to start out at all, it has to be an honest start. I'll tell you that I was nearly given to despair. Things in the settlement are maybe more complicated than I can quite explain right now, and there's things you'll learn for yourself before too long, whether I like it or not, and there have been difficulties with food and with sickness, and it was hard enough even before I lost your pa, and I nearly gave up. But I didn't give up. I didn't give up because of you, my beautiful, beautiful boy, my wondrous son who might make something better of this world, who I promise to raise only with love and hope, and who I swear will see this world come good. I swear it. Because when I held you for the first time this morning and fed you from my own body, I felt so much love for you it was almost like pain, almost like I couldn't stand it one second longer. But only almost. And I sang to you a song that my mother sang to me, and her mother sang to her, and it goes... And here, amazingly, Viola sings. Actually sings. My skin goes goose pimply. My chest crushes. She must have heard the whole tune in my noise, and of course Ben's singing it, 'cause here it comes, rolling out of her mouth like the peal of a bell. The voice of Viola making the world into the voice of my ma, singing the song. Early one morning, just as the sun was rising, I heard a maiden call from the valley below. Oh, don't deceive me, oh, never leave me. How could you use a poor maiden so? I can't look at her. I can't look at her. I put my hands to my head. And it's a sad song, Todd, but it's also a promise. I'll never deceive you, and I'll never leave you, and I promise you this, so you can one day promise it to others and know that it's true.
Oh, Todd, that's you crying. That's you crying from your cot, waking up from your first sleep on your first day, waking up and asking the world to come to you. And so for today, I have to put this aside. You're calling for me, son, and I will answer.
Viola stops, and there's only the river and my noise.
There's more,
Viola says after a while when I don't raise my head. She flips through the pages.
There's a lot more.
She looks at me.
Do you want me to read more?
She looks back at the book.
Do you want me to read the end?
The end. Read the last thing my ma wrote in the last days before...
No,
I say quickly.
You're calling for me, son, and I will answer.
In my noise, forever. No, I say again. Let's leave it there for now. And I glance over at Viola, and I see that her face is pulled as sad as my noise feels. Her eyes are wet, and her chin shakes just barely, just a tremble in the dawn sunlight. She sees me watching, feeling my noise watching her, and she turns away to face the river.
And there, in that morning, in that new sunrise, I realized something. I realized something important. So important that as it dawns fully, I have to stand up. I know what she's thinking. I know what she's thinking. Even looking at her back, I know what she's thinking and feeling and what's going on inside her. The way she's turned her body, the way she's holding her head and her hands and the book in her lap, the way she's stiffening a little in her back as she hears all this in my noise. I can read it. I can read her. 'Cause she's thinking about how her own parents also came here with hope like my ma. She's wondering if the hope at the end of our road is just as false as the one that was at the end of my ma's. And she's taking the words of my ma and putting them into the mouths of her own ma and pa, and hearing them say that they love her, and they miss her, and they wish her the world. And she's taking the song of my ma and she's weaving it into everything else till it becomes a sad thing all her own. And it hurts her. But it's an okay hurt. But it hurts still. But it's good. But it hurts. She hurts. I know all this. I know it's true. 'Cause I can read her. I can read her noise, even though she ain't got none. I know who she is. I know Viola Ede. I raise my hands to the side of my head to hold it all in.
Viola,
I whisper, my voice shaking.
I know,
she says quietly, pulling her arms tight around her, still facing away from me. And I look at her sitting there, and she looks across the river, and we wait as the dawn fully arrives, each of us knowing. Each of us knowing the other. 39. The Falls. The sun creeps up into the sky and the river is loud as we look across it, and we can now see it rushing fast down toward the valley's end, throwing up white water and rapids. It's Viola who breaks the spell that's fallen twixt us.
You know what it has to be, don't you?
She says. She takes out the binocs and looks downriver. The sun is rising at the end of the valley. She has to shield the lenses with her hand. What is it? I say. She presses a button or two and looks again. What do you see? I ask. She hands the binocs to me. I look downriver, following the rapids, the foam, right to the end. A few miles away, the river ends in midair. Another falls, I say.
Looks way bigger than the one we saw with Wilf, she says.
The road'll find a way past it, I say. Shouldn't bother us.
That's not what I mean.
What then?
I mean,
she says, frowning a bit at my denseness,
that falls that big are bound to have a city at the bottom of them, that if you had to choose a place anywhere on a planet for a first settlement, then a valley at the base of a waterfall with rich farmland and ready water might just look perfect from space.
My noise rises a little, but only a little, 'cause who would dare to think?
Haven,
I say.
I'll bet you anything we've found it,
she says.
I'll bet you when we get to that waterfall we'll be able to see it below us.
If we run, I say, we could be there in an hour. Less than. She looks me in the eye for the first time since my ma's book, and she says,
if we run?
And then she smiles, a genuine smile. And I know what that means, too. We grab our few things and go, faster than before. My feet are tired and sore. Hers must be too. I've got blisters and aches, and my heart hurts from all I miss and all that's gone, and hers does too. But we run. Boy, do we run. 'Cause maybe, shut up, just maybe, don't think it. Maybe there really is hope at the end of the road. The river grows wider and straighter as we rush on, and the walls of the valley move in closer and closer, the one on our side getting so close the edge of the road starts to slope up. Spray from the rapids is floating in the air, our clothes get wet, our faces too, and hands. The roar becomes thunderous, filling up the world with itself, almost like a physical thing, but not in a bad way. Like it's washing you, like it's washing the noise away, and I think, please, let Haven be at the bottom of the falls. Please!
'cause I see Viola looking back at me as we run, and there's brightness on her face, and she keeps urging me on with tilts of her head and smiles, and I think how hope may be the thing that pulls you forward, maybe the thing that keeps you going, but that it's dangerous, too, that it's painful and risky, that it's making a dare to the world, and when has the world ever let us win a dare? Please let Haven be there. Oh, please. Oh, please. Oh, please. The road finally starts rising a bit, pulling up above the river slightly as the water starts really crashing through rocky rapids. There ain't no more wooded parts twixt us and it now at all. Just a hill climbing up steeper and steeper on our right side as the valley closes in, and then nothing but river and the falls ahead. Almost there! Viola calls from ahead of me running, her hair bouncing off the back of her neck, the sun shining down on everything. And then at the edge of the cliff, the road comes to a lip and takes a sudden angle down and to the right. And that's where we stop. The falls are huge, half a mile across easy. The water roars over the cliff in a violent white foam, sending spray hundreds of feet out into the sheer drop and above and all around, soaking us in our clothes and throwing rainbows all over the place as the rising sun lights it. Todd, Viola says, so faintly I can barely hear it. But I don't need to. I know what she means. As soon as the falls start falling, the valley opens up, wide as the sky itself, taking the river that starts again at the base of the falls. It crashes forward with white water before it pools and calms down and becomes a river again, and flows into Haven. Haven. Gotta be. Spread out below us like a table full of food. There it is, Viola says, and I feel her fingers wrap around my own. The falls to our left, spray and rainbows in the sky, the sun rising ahead of us, the valley below, and a Haven, sitting, waiting. It's 3, maybe 4 miles away down the farther valley, but there it is. There it ruddy well is. I look round us, round to where the road has taken a sharp turn at our feet, sloping down and cutting into the valley wall to our right, but then zigzagging its way steeply down in a twisty pattern, so even it's like a zipper running down the hillside to where it picks up the river again, and follows it right into Haven. I want to see it, Viola says, letting go of my hand and taking out the binocs. She looks through them, wipes spray off the lenses, and looks some more. It's beautiful, she says, and that's all she says, and she just looks and wipes off more spray. After a minute, and without saying nothing more, she hands me the binocs, and I get my first look at Haven. The spray is so thick, even wiping it down, you can't see details like people or anything, but there are all kinds of different buildings, mostly surrounding what looks like a big church at the center, but other big buildings too, and real roads curling out of the middle through trees to more groups of buildings. There's gotta be at least 50 buildings in all. Maybe 100. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I've got to say, Viola shouts, it's kind of smaller than I expected. But I don't really hear her. With the binocs, I follow the river road back from it, and I see what's probably a roadblock with what might be a fortified fence running away from it and to either side. They're getting ready, I say. They're getting ready to fight. Viola looks at me, worried. You think it's big enough? You think we're safe? Depends on if the rumors of the army are true or not. I look behind us by instinct, as if the army was just waiting there for us to move on. I look up the valley hill next to us. Could be a good view. Let's find out, I say. We run back down the road a ways, looking for a good climbing spot, find one, and make our way up. My legs feel light as I climb, my noise clearer than it's been in days. I'm sad for Ben. I'm sad for Killian. I'm sad for Manchie. I'm sad for what's happened to me and Viola. But Ben was right. There's hope at the bottom of the biggest waterfall. And maybe it don't hurt so much after all. We climb up through the trees. The hill is steep above the river, and we have to pull on vines and hang on to rocks to make our way up high enough to look back down the road, till the valley is stretching out beneath us. I still have the binocs, and I look down river, and down the road, and over the treetops. I keep having to wipe spray away. I look. Can you see them? Viola asks. I look,
the river getting smaller into the far distance, back and back and back. No, I say. I look. And again. And there. Down in the deepest curve of the road, in the deepest part of the valley, in farthest shadow against the rising sun, there they are. A mass that's gotta be the army, marching its way forward, so far away I can only tell it's them at all, 'cause it looks like dark water flowing into a dry riverbed. It's hard to get detail at this distance, so I can't see individual men, and I don't think I can see horses. Just a mass. A mass pouring itself down the road. How big is it? She asks. How big has it grown? I don't know, I say. 300? 4? I don't know. We're too far to really... I stop. We're too far to really tell. I crack a smile. Miles and miles. We beat them, Viola says, a smile coming too. We ran, and they chased us, and we beat them. We'll get to Haven, and we'll warn whoever's in charge, I say, talking faster, my noise rising with excitement. But they've got battle lines, and the approach is real narrow, and the army's at least the rest of the day away, maybe even tonight, too. And I swear that can't be 1,000 men. I swear it. But... Viola's smiling the tiredest, happiest smile I ever saw. She takes my hand again. We beat them. But then, the risks of hope rise again, and my noise grays a little. Well, we ain't there yet, and we don't know if Haven can... But she's shaking her head. Nuh-uh, she says. We beat them. You listen to me and you be happy, Todd Hewitt. We've spent all this time outrunning an army, and guess what? We outran them. She looks at me, smiling, expecting something from me. My noise is buzzing and happy and warm and tired and relieved and a little bit worried still, but I'm thinking that maybe she's right. Maybe we did win, and maybe I should put my arms round her if it didn't feel weird, and I find that in the middle of it all, I do actually agree with her. We beat him, I say. And then she does stick her arms round me and pulls tight like we might fall down, and we just stand there on the wet hillside and breathe for a little bit. She smells a little less like flowers, but it's okay. And I look out, and the falls are below us, charging away, and Haven glitters through the sunlit spray, and the sun is shining down the length of the river above the falls, lighting it up like a snake made of metal. I let my noise bubble with little sparks of happy, and my gaze flow back along the length of the river, and... No. Every muscle in my body jolts. What? Viola says, jumping back. She whips her head round to where I'm looking. What? She says again. And then she sees. No, she says. No, it can't be. Coming down the river is a boat. Close enough to see without binocs. Close enough to see the rifle and the robe. Close enough to see the scars and the righteous anger. Rowing his way furiously toward us. Coming like judgment itself. Aaron. 40. The Sacrifice.
Has he seen us?
Viola asks, her voice pulled taut. I point the binocs. Aaron rears up in them, huge and terrifying. I press a few buttons to push him back. He's not looking at us, just rowing like an engine to get the boat to the side of the river and the road. His face is torn and horrible, clotted and bloody, the hole in his cheek, the new hole where his nose used to be, and still, underneath all that, a look ferocious and devouring, a look without mercy, a look that won't stop, that won't never, never stop. War makes monsters of men, I hear Ben saying. There's a monster coming toward us.
I don't think he's seen us, I say. Not yet. Can we outrun him?
He's got a gun, I say. And you can see all the way down that road to Haven.
Off the road, then. Through the trees.
There ain't that many twixt us and the road down.
We'll have to be fast.
I can be fast, she says. And we jump on down the hill, skidding on leaves and wet vines, using rocks as handholds as best we can. The tree cover is light, and we can still see down the river, see Aaron as he rows, which means he can see us if he looks in the right place.
Hurry!
Viola says. Down, and down, and sliding to the road, and squelching in the mud at the roadside, and as we get to the road, he's out of sight again, still up.